put on 2610 for Denver.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so put that out.
5 minutes left, so it's
what close are we learning for?
Yeah, that's true.
Denver and New England.
Is that what
you
said?
No, no.
It's got a little interest there.
I don't have any interest. I didn't watch it. I'm learning now. If I had interest, I'd tell you guys I wasn't giving class today.
When I'm not here on Super Bowl Sunday, it's not because I'm watching. So that's why I'm not going to be here. So when you say, come on, they're all watching.
It's a great miracle.
You'll just send me a note the next day, you know. Okay, here we go. We're at Rambam Hilchos Eidos. Maybe if everybody doesn't come, we won't give class. Rambam Hilchos Eidos, Perek Arbasor, Halacha, Chapter 14, Law 1. We're now talking about people who are not allowed to testify. Now we're going to get to a situation that I think Shelley brought up, or that we have talked around it, but now this is the place where we want to deal with it. Anybody that you cannot testify regarding him because he is married to one of your relatives, already said that the husband is like the wife, and if the wife was your relative, now that the husband married, he becomes like the relative, and you couldn't testify again. Let's say your sister. You can't testify about your sister gets married, you can't testify to the husband, right? Fine. Anybody like that, if now, after they got married, and you couldn't testify, but now, imesa ishta, what if the wife dies? Your sister-in-law, Leinu, dies.
Your sister
dies. He's your brother-in-law, but the sister's not around anymore. Let's take it further. They had kids. So now you have nephews and nieces from your deceased sister and her husband, so there's a solid proof that there was a relationship, that even a memory of the relationship is very there. Hareza nisrachek, he has become distanced through her demise, v'kosher, and he's allowed to testify for anything after they are now distanced. Okay, in other words, the prohibition of testifying is only as long as the man is married to his wife. In other words, the woman, and it goes the other way as well, but let's say it's simple. The woman was your sister. So your sister, she can't testify about her, anything like that. The man marries your sister, he now is your sister for all intents and purposes because he's married to the sister. Right? That's why you can't testify regarding him. But once the sister dies, that whole connection he had to you is gone. Because the only way he's like your sister, because the sister was alive. Once she's alive, that relationship ceases. He's no longer married to your sister.
He's still the uncle of the two.
Doesn't matter. He has no relationship through marriage to those people.
Just to the man.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what relationship did he have. Well, the kids were his kids.
Not kids. The kids were his sister's
kids. Yeah. All right, so what relationship? So the sister couldn't testify to the kids.
He can't testify to the kids either. It's the uncle.
Yeah, you'd think.
The uncle can't testify with his nephew.
Wait a minute. It's his kids.
It's his sister's kids.
Okay, so you're not related. So the kids, it's your sister's kids. So it's from your sister's part. That never stopped.
Right.
The husband part stopped.
Right.
The husband part. Yeah, you can't testify to your nephew because they're still your nephew. But it's a blood relationship. But the married relative was not a blood relationship. It was only relationship insofar as he was married to your sister, and therefore he is your sister. But once the sister's dead, then he's not your sister. He's no relationship to you anymore.
So he's only released from the sister's husband and not from their children.
Right.
Well, because they are related to him, even if the man wasn't married to her, right? They're her kids.
Right, exactly.
The English is kind of weird.
Finished, right? And that will also apply if they were divorced. Divorce would be the same thing. Because once you're divorced, it's cut. There's nothing left.
As a witness to the husband of the
Yeah, it should be clear in English.
In other words, it's me to my brother-in-law, the simple example. Yeah. We can't testify for each other. But the only connection after the brother-in-law is my sister. When she's gone, there's no connection. My nephews and nieces, you know, right? They're my nephews and nieces no matter what. Because it's my blood sister. It had kids. And that never stops. But this married guy, I have no business with him anymore. Yeah. And that's where it ends.
So he's not going to be your brother-in-law anymore? Like, technically?
Really? You wouldn't not call from a halachic point of view of testimony. You have nothing to do with him from a halachic point of view. Remember, the whole idea of testimony, remember we said, why can't relatives testify? Is there a reason or is it gzeiras hakasuv? It's gzeiras hakasuv. We're not worried about reasons. Once you're not a relative, it's finished. You're not a relative anymore.
So, Rabbi, what would happen if you use evidence, you witness something
Base! Okay, we're going to catch everything now in base. Okay.
Leave it to the Rabbi.
Okay. Misha, it's a long one now, base. Misha, base and gimel. Misha hayodela chaveru edus ad shalo nasa chasano. Let's say somebody knew a testimony about another person. Let's say on Sunday, he saw something that somebody did, and that's something he would have to testify to what he did. And they're not related on Sunday. But on Monday already, he married the guy's daughter, and he became his son-in-law. Okay? Or whatever, father-in-law, whatever it is, right? So now, he becomes his son-in-law, and now there's what to testify about what he saw when he wasn't his son-in-law, but now he is his son-in-law. So on Sunday, he saw something that could be testifiable in the future on Sunday. And on Monday, he's a son-in-law. Okay? So now, when he saw it, he was a kosher witness to what he saw. But today, when he'll have to come to court to testify, he now is a relative and he's not a kosher witness. So what's going to be? Or, Shiodeha Edus Fupiket. Let's say a guy knew, saw something, and he was of sound mind and body, and everything's fine, and he's a healthy guy. And then, and he saw it. And then the next day, when it's time to go to court, let's say, V'achach Nischaresh. Then he becomes deaf and mute, which already said he can't testify anymore. Right? Further. Or, Pasuach. His eyes were open when he saw something on Sunday. He was well sighted, and v'nistame, and then he became blinded. He can't see anymore. These are all people who can no longer testify. That's what we're giving. All the cases are similar. That when you witness the event, you were 100% kosher witness, and then and now when it's time to testify, you're not 100% kosher witness. Let's say even more. Even though now you're blind, let's say that, but you know everything that you could say. But let's say it's a question of testimony about land, let's say. And you, let's say, know that the guy owned the land 25 feet, you know, west of this border, whatever. So even though he's blind, he can't say, he says, I know exactly what it was. It was 25 feet. He knows it all clear. It's not, well, you can't see now. How are you going to know? No, he knows it exactly clear. And he has definite borders that he clearly can articulate, even though he can't see them now. Or another case, Shafoi, a person who has wisdom, a smart, intelligent person, Finishtata, and then he becomes mentally unstable. Okay, in all these scenarios, right now, the person is not a kosher witness, and it ranges vastly. Because from the first few cases, the person has the same sound mind and same sound body. Nothing really has changed for him. His ability to speak and testify and everything. But the problem is now he's either related or he can't talk, whatever. Doesn't matter. Right now he's puzzled. So I raise that puzzle. Because now when he's in the court, all these people cannot testify right now. A relative can't testify. A person who is a deaf mute right now cannot testify. A blind person cannot testify, etc., etc. So cannot testify, and we don't go with their testimony. However, so let's say he saw something to this guy before he became his brother-in-law, right? And now the next day they become brother-in-laws, right? So now he can't testify. That's exactly the question you asked, right? But let's take it a step further. Avolim heri yodea lo edus ad shalo nasa chasana v'nasa chasana umesa vito. Let's say three things happen now. Let's say he saw a testimony before he became the son-in-law. Okay. Next day, he's the son-in-law, and he can't go to court. Next day, his wife or the daughter, whatever it is, dies. So he's no longer related. Okay. So now we have three steps. When he saw it, he was a witness. Now there's a time where he can't be a witness. And then now that the wife died, he now goes back to potentially being a good witness. Right? Because now there's nothing to hold back.
Right.
Or all the same cases. Pikeach v'nis charesh. He was mentally fine, everything, and then he became a deaf mute, and then he became well again. He was mentally sound, then he became imbalanced, and then he became mentally sound. He could see, then he was blind, he could see. Right? So we say in all those cases, kosher. He's kosher, even though there was a time where he could not testify, but right now he could testify. And we don't assume that what happened in the middle makes a break, so to speak. Well, he was a little bit imbalanced in between, so why should we believe him now when he saw, when he says he was balanced? We don't care. When he saw he was balanced, when he's testified, what was in the middle doesn't make any difference anymore. Zachlau, here's the rule. As long as the beginning, meaning what? When you saw what there was to testify at. And at the end, when now you could testify, and those were states of being a kosher witness, even though in the middle he was not a kosher witness, kosher, he's okay. But trilaso bepaslus. But what if in the beginning, now he's jumping here, in the beginning he was pasul. This was not the first case the Rambam said. I mean, obviously, the Rambam didn't have to tell us the rule. What he didn't say, which is obvious, if he was kosher in the beginning and pasul the end, he's pasul. That he doesn't have to repeat, because that's obvious, right? But the Rambam now adds, what if he was again, when they first saw it, he was not kosher. He was a relative when he sees it. He was blind when he sees it, he doesn't see it. He was mentally incompetent. What he saw was in a state of incompetence. What he saw when he was a deaf mute, whatever. And now he's perfectly healthy. And the guy, well, when I saw it, I was a deaf mute, but now I'm not a deaf mute, or whatever. But the beginning was puzzle. Afal pisha sofa, but kashim at the end, he is kosher. Puzzle, he's not good. It's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says, v'hu aid ora'a. He witnessed or he saw, meaning to say, it starts from the beginning of the seeing, that it has to be a seeing that's worthy for testimony. So in other words, when you see it, it has to be that we could, this second, you could testify. Because if you think about it, if you're puzzled, then how well are you going to really look at it? For example, if it's your brother-in-law,
oh,
you know right away, I'm puzzle phrase. So you think you're going to look at everything so carefully?
No.
Or you're deaf? All these cases are, you are, but it doesn't matter if he knows or not.
Right.
But generally speaking, people will know, they're not a good witness.
Yeah.
You're not a good witness. How careful can you be looking if you know you're not going to be, oh, all of a sudden you became a good witness. Right? So therefore we don't apply. Now, here comes an interesting scenario now, which we touched on a while ago. Lefikach, therefore, Misha Deh Be'edis V'Katan, let's say he sees something as a child.
Pasulatus.
Ve'ed Bokshagol, now he's grown up, and he testifies. Eina Klum, it is nothing. Why is it nothing? Because at the state when he saw it, he was Pasul. Now, you're going to ask questions, because you're going to remember in the last set of halachas, it seems that kids, when they grew up, were able to testify. That was bothering me, too, when I looked at. Therefore, we go to halacha Gimel, we'll answer your question.
Okay.
And we'll see, when do we say this rule?
But so, actually, I'm glad the rabbi added to this with respect to the relative, because unlike the deaf and the blind and whatever, they were fully capable of seeing what they saw, but I guess the addition is that they weren't careful to perceive everything,
we would assume,
because they know they're not going to be testifying.
Well, that would seem to be a reason. Well, I'm giving you svara.
I'm saying it's different from all the other.
It's a xeris akasav anyway. He has to be able to see and testify at the same time. I'm just giving you a little svara.
I mean, no, but
if my svara is good or not, doesn't matter. The puzzle, I'm just trying to make it a little logical.
I'm just saying I needed that.
Okay.
In the sense that all the others, even the child, are not as capable of witnessing because there's something negative about them, that they're too young, or they don't have their senses, or they don't have their mental capabilities. But with the relative, they have all their faculties. So why wouldn't what they see be appropriate, except we're saying that they would have less care because they wouldn't expect to test.
Applying the logic, but even without my logic, it would be the halacha anyway.
Because of the pasuk.
Because of the pasuk.
Okay.
The pasuk anyway. I'm just saying the pasuk, for our benefit, happens to make sense.
Right, because that was my question.
Sometimes the psukim don't make sense, but we have to accept it anyway. But here it makes a lot of sense. Okay, now, with everyone's jumping, wait a minute, we talked about that when kids saw certain things, we do believe them. So look what the Rambam lays down, a golden rule. The Yesh Dvarim, there are certain situations, Shesomchim, and we will rely on a child, Al Eda Shemek Shugadol, when he testifies, when he's an adult, for things he saw as a child. Why? And here's the important rule. Hovein Dvarim Shalim, in rabbinic areas. In rabbinic areas where the whole requirement for testimony biblically is not required. And the rabbis were the ones who were insisting testimony. So when it's the rabbis who insisted, they will waive it because the whole reason why they're not good is in a biblical, from a biblical verse. That's what we have to call back to the biblical verse, Paul. In other words, when it's a biblical reason why, when you were puzzled to begin with, when you saw it, you're not good, right? So therefore, when it's biblical situation, don't allow it. For a katan, we will make an exception when it's only the requirement of testimony is rabbinic, so the rabbis did not apply it there. Why they didn't waive it in the other scenarios, I don't know. But by children who grow up, because he's essentially the same person. I mean, let's be honest. The kid's 12 years and 364 days, and maybe add two more days. Not a lot has changed, right? But still in all, right?
But
still
in all, he's 5 years old.
Possible. Yeah. But he doesn't say. But anyway, the rabbis rely on it. Why they picked on this one and not on others? You could say maybe because it's a natural thing that has to happen. In other words, the child is different than every other situation. Because 100% of all children who see things will also be adults to recall that event. Which is not the case of all the other cases. If the guy was a relative, he may not be a relative later. Right? This is more of a natural change that is always going to be. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a psul that will automatically evaporate over time. While all the other psulim, no reason for it to ever evaporate. So, therefore we would tend to want to suggest that their testimony has more force, as it were, because it's something that they'll always become adults. Maybe that's the reason to make the chiluk. But anyway, let's take a look at some scenarios, and I don't know why. The Rambam chooses to, I mean, he could give one or two examples and we would get the idea. The Rambam gives about 10. So we're going to have to go through all of them till the half hour mark, and then we'll stop. Yeah?
Just getting back to that. So like in a matter that would happen today, unfortunately a child was abused. So would that child's testimony fall into this sort of category?
It would have to see, is it a biblical issue? Is it a rabbinic issue? Most of what you're talking about is probably, it's biblical.
Biblical?
Abuse, what did the guy abuse the guy? So now what do you want to do now? I mean, from a Torah perspective, what do you want to do? Let's say a man molested little boys. Okay, and let's say he molested them carnally. All right, so what could you do? You could lash him, maybe, but whatever. That's going to be biblical. Those are biblical averos, usually molestation and stuff like that. You hit him; it's a biblical law. Those are all biblical laws, and we can't accept the child's testimony, even if, let's say, he watched him do it to somebody else, even. Right? Those are all biblical laws, which we're not going to accept. Doesn't mean to say we won't hear them and we'll use that information for the courts to use their discretionary powers, but we're talking about the letter of the law testimony. We can't accept it on a biblical level.
Yeah.
rabbi can always use any of his research. Listen, if a Jewish bezin hears from 25 kids that this teacher's been molesting them, you know, even though they may not be able to punish, but they're definitely going to look at that information and use it to do something. Right? That's not a question. But you're talking about now sort of brute law of admissible evidence as testimony to make psak halachas to stone him or whatever. You know, let's say a kid, two kids walk in, two adults walk in. So when we were kids, we both warned him not to rape the other boy. We told him, shouldn't do this. And now he grew up. So now we want to kill him biblically, don't we? Can't. Well, he can definitely do things to keep him away from society. That's discretionary now. But to biblically punish him, we can't do that because the testimony is inadmissible evidence. Because it's not a biblical issue. If it be a rabbinic issue, we'll see in the areas that we can believe him. But you're raising a good practical point. So, again, a Jewish court should deal with it, but they'd have to use their discretionary powers as opposed to their straightforward powers. So now let's see now. So now that we said so, Rabbi, here's the list of things that when the child becomes an adult, he can testify and will believe him for what he saw as a kid. Number one area we've already discussed, we said that a signed document normally has a status biblically of what? A signed document.
Speaking mouths in the court.
It's as if, biblically, there's two witnesses who told us about it, and we accept it as it is. But what did the rabbis say?
Gotta confirm it.
We have to validate it. Oh, so now, why do we need to validate? To make the rabbis happy, right? So, in case the guy wants to cheat, whatever, right? So now, what if a kid wants to validate a signature that he saw signed when he was a kid, and now he's an adult, says, this is so-and-so's signature. I saw him sign it when I was 12 years old. So here we go. Neman Adam Lower Brisbane believed to say, Zek Sav Yodoshoavi. For example, say, this is my father's signature.
Right?
Alright. O Shal Rabbi, or my Rebbe, O Shalach, my brother. Neshekim Sharz Nidivraim. Since, verifying documents is only rabbinic, the rabbis only needed it for that purpose. So therefore, we believe what they saw as a child. Or, let's talk about other examples. Let's say we're dealing with if a man marries a girl and we have to know if she had the status of a basula. Now, why do we need to know if a woman's a basula? Primarily for her ksuva, right? Now, the ksuva is mandated by what? Torah or rabbis?
Torah.
Ksuva? Well, we'll see. So, Zachar ani baploni shenises v'nasol minig basulas. I remember when I was a kid, that this girl got married and the customs that surrounded the wedding were the customs they do if the woman is a basula.
So
remember we said
they
put crowns around her. You only do for a basula, right? Now the difference is 100 or 200. Now that certainly is not a biblical issue. So, but we add a few points here. So now, Hoel Varov Nashim Basulas. So number one, since most women who get married are basulas, so all we
know about that
in the frum Jewish world, they are right. Okay, and therefore you really don't need testimony as much as just what do you call it? Publicizing it. In other words, that it should just be revealed. So and also uksuva medivreim, and the ksuva is rabbinic. Okay. Really, there's no biblical requirement to give a ksuva. The rabbi says you shouldn't treat women lightly. All right. So, therefore, we're going to believe the kids to say, I know that when I was a kid, I saw the chuppah look like was a basula. And now he's an adult. He's allowed to testify for that. All right, let's pick another case. Now, there's another issue called a base hapras. What's a base hapras? A base hapras, we know that a cemetery, a kohen cannot walk in a cemetery, he can't even walk in a grave. Let's say you had a grave, and for whatever reason, the plow went and plowed it all out. Okay, now we know that there's gotta be some bones around. You don't see any bones per se, but now they gotta be around.
Right.
So the rabbis say that there's a certain distance called a beis hapras that we assume that the bones have traveled and they take up a much larger area than the little area they were taking, and it takes up a spot of 100 amas, either a circle, squared, whatever. It's 100 amas It's like a 200 square foot radius from the Kibbutz. We assume that. Now that's all rabbinically. Because we don't know for sure where it is, but the rabbis say it's a problem, right? So let's say, you know, there's a huge place, a huge valley, and we know one grave got done. So this guy would like to testify. He says, you know, when I was a kid, I saw where they plowed, and I know it was in this spot. And this is the spot that's the base of Pras, and the rest is fine. Now, you were just a kid when you saw it. Now, but the whole issue is only rabbinic tumah to begin with. Right. So therefore he can say, Shamokam azeh beis hapras, this area is a beis hapras, where the tumah separated. Pras can also come from the word to break. And that's where the bones were broken, and therefore it spread out, and I can testify that area, and we'll believe it. Or let's say, issues of Tchum Shabbos. Tchum Shabbos is a rabbinic prohibition. Now the kid says, you know, we want to know, you know, where is the Tchum Shabbos? So he says, Va'ad kan ha'yinu boim b'Shabbos. This is how far, when I was a kid, we would walk on Shabbos.
Right.
And that's the Tchum. Okay, so now we'll believe him. Because we say, Shitzimtzum ha'Tchum, the way we measure a Tchum is at Alpayim Amos, 2,000 Amos, that's Bilvad alone, meter, that's rabbinic. Or let's say we're not sure if somebody was a Kohen for certain rabbinic issues of Kahuna. Not biblical issues of Kahuna, but rabbinic issues of Truma. He says, for example, as a kid I saw Shaiish Ploni Yotzim, he says, Sefer, he was my friend in school, little Yankel HaKohen, right? Yankel, my good friend, in grade 4, he'd leave school, leave bowl to go to the mikveh, tell the guys, listen, I gotta go to the mikveh now before I get home. Why? Felech will be chosen up because I have to eat shroom at night. And so then I was Tomei, so now I need to.
So it's
kind of thing. The kid says, oh, my friend was a coin. I could tell he was a coin.
That was at
Sam's. Even, you know, he would divide up, he would come to the granary, right? And when my father would give out the truma, right? And he came. Or we'd bring challah or gifts to him. Leploni coin of the asphalt, to certain coin through the boy. And they, you know, he was the son, and they, you know, we, v'amar, and v'amar li, or my father said to me, mishpacha zuksher, this family's a kosher family. Mishpacha zupsula, this family's not a kosher, family. Right? In terms of kahuna. Or, v'shachalno baktsotso shel ploni shechalono echov, or we ate a fruit barrel of so-and-so that his brothers gave to him. I'll explain what that is. Lo'odia shechem, because that one, they want to inform everybody that their brother Ploni, nasa isha shenagas, he married a woman that a kohen's not allowed to marry. Meaning to say, when a kohen marries a woman, yeah. So he's messed everything up. So what they did was, in those days, to publicize it, they took a barrel of fruit, and they would cut it and break it in half on its width and say, look what our brother did. He, so to speak, cut his yichus, as it were. So we're symbolically taking the barrel with the fruit and cutting it in half, and that's publicizing our brother. So when I was a kid, I saw that family do this. All right? Anyway, Shekol Elo Hadvarim La'asik Zeh Koyin Lechvara, either these things are maintaining he can eat truma, Sheldi frame, but only when it's rabbinic truma. Because remember, truma can also be very biblical. Let's say truma in chutz l'aretz, or truma on fruits, or truma beyond grain, wine, and oils, which are only rabbinic in nature. So to allow him to eat truma all late chutzpah, or to push him away, right, where there's already some questions about him, right? And the question we want to make him kosher says, well, no, those negative rumors are true. So in that area, we will believe him. All right, good place to stop.